Hello, once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Friday, November 1st edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We're going to go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as we wrap up this week here on Bang the Book Radio. Two items of business left. The first, our Westgate Super Contest selection segment for week 9. My thoughts for this week in the NFL, coming off of a very difficult week 8, hoping to bounce back here in week 9. Second half of today's show, Brent, the head risk manager down at DSI Sportsbook, will join me for this week's version of the odds report. Sharp money out there in both the college football and the NFL betting markets. Very much looking forward to what Brent has to say here on today's program. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Lots of great stuff being put together by our excellent cast of writers. I've got a preview up for this weekend's Breeders' Cup Classic. And we're also going to do a special edition of Bang the Book Radio on Friday, talking with Brian Blessing, our resident horse racing expert, about this week at the Breeders' Cup there at Santa Anita. Not just the main event, the Classic, but also some of the other races that are on the card here for this weekend. Should be a whole lot of fun. And there's also a video preview over on our Bang the Book YouTube page with Brian's thoughts on the Breeders' Cup. Also over at the website, daily NHL stuff from Parker Michaels. Danny Forges' updated NFL power ratings and model projections for this week, my college football power ratings, and as always, we have situational betting tips for college football, the NBA, and the NHL. Got NASCAR coverage for you this weekend, UFC 244, had a very good golf preview from James Mazzola for the WGC HSBC Champions event, soccer previews, the tennis season is over, but when that comes back around, Big Ten Waddle with some great outright write-ups for us. Tons of good stuff going on over at the website. Please make sure you check it all out. As you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB, the number 200, is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. And as we wrap up this week on the show, you can find the segments of Bang the Book Radio over on our Bang the Book YouTube page. You can also find them on Spreaker, Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, Podbean, TuneIn, Overcast. Wherever you find your podcast content, you're going to find Bang the Book Radio there, whether it's the full shows or the segments, whatever you're looking for, plenty of ways to find that. All right, let's go. Week 9 of the Westgate Super Contest here, and I got to be honest with you, Monday and Tuesday were very, very difficult mentally for me coming off of the cardinal sin here in the Super Contest, an 0-5 week, now 19-20-1 on the season. And, you know, these are things that are very tough to come back from. And I kind of felt that here this week because now at this point in time, probably just playing for personal pride. 53 points was the cutoff in the Super Contest last year. So obviously I've got a very long way to go with that here. 45 picks left in the Super Contest, would have to hit 35 of them in order to make the money. So for now, probably just looking at personal pride more than anything. However, the Circa Million, still some opportunities there in that. You've got the quarter prizes. The third quarter starts here this week and runs through week 12. Then the fourth quarter, week 13 through week 17, where the top prize is $143,750. So still some reasons to be engaged in the Circa and reasons to be engaged here in the Super Contest as well. Going for some personal pride here, try to get back on track. And also, too, there is the mini contest for $20,000 at the end of the year. So hopefully can make some moves here, kind of get back in the running. But you know what? Look, every year, no matter how much you do this, and I've done this here at Bang the Book for several years, every season, every week, every day, you learn something new here in this business. You figure out a different way of looking at things, a different way of breaking things down. So hopefully we can bounce back here in the Super Contest. And look, I mean, at this point last year, I was 10-25-5. So at least I'm doing better than that. Again, obviously a long shot to make the money here, but still a lot of personal pride on the line. And also, too, I've got listeners. I've got readers, you know, some people that greatly respect my opinions. And I certainly want to validate those people. So going to do everything I can here to finish the NFL season strong, hopefully beginning here in week 9. And you know what? Maybe a 5-0 will get me back on track here a little bit. So that would be the hope here for this week. That is 19-20-1 with the Bang the Book podcast entry. The bangthebook.com entry, 2-3 last week, now 21-19 overall. Last week, the field in the Super Contest, 46.34%, now 49.99% overall. So virtually flipping coins here on these NFL sides with no VIG and the stale numbers that come out on Wednesday night. So a little bit disconcerting at the field, now below 50% here. The leaders did split the midseason $15,000 prize at 31-9. Right now, the top 100 plus ties would be 26 points. So again, got to get hot here and hopefully make some ground up. Last week in the traditional Super Contest, the consensus was 6-8. Green Bay and Kansas City had the exact same number of picks, hence the 6-8 record. Top five consensus went 2-3. Year to date now, the Super Contest consensus, the most selected side in each game, 53, 63, and 2. The top five consensus now 21-19 on the season. Over in the gold, just 44.52% last week, now 50.95% for the season. Interestingly enough, the Circa Million field last week, 52.01%, so about 5.75% better than the traditional Super Contest field. The Circa comes in at 50.63% now year to date. And keep in mind, again, that's with that huge discrepancy in week two between the Browns game in the Circa, where it was 6.5 and where it was 2.5 in the Super Contest. Obviously, the Browns covered every number there, but over 2,000 entrants took that in the Super Contest. Less, or I think just about 10.7% of the field or something like that in the Circa Million wound up taking that game. So a big difference there, yet the Circa still doing better here this season year to date. And congratulations to the entry, Concrete Mike, 17-2-1, the winning score there in the second quarter. So it was 17-3 for the first quarter, 17-2-1 here in the second quarter. And with my 0-5 over in the Circa, now 18-21-1 with that entry. So again, first or the third quarter starts up here this week in the Circa Million. So that gives me something to shoot for. And again, looking for personal pride and a chance to get back in the running here in the Super Contest, maybe string a couple of good weeks together. One of the things I do like to do here on this segment every week, now that we've got the Circa Million to compete with the Super Contest, is to look at the line differences between the games here, between those two contests. And we've got some interesting ones here, nothing earth shattering, but the Texans are -1 in the Super Contest, -1.5 over in the Circa. Chiefs -2.5 at the Westgate, -2 down at the Golden Gate, downtown where Circa Sports is located. Raiders -2.5 in the Super Contest, 2 in the Circa. Seahawks -6 in the Super Contest, 5.5 in the Circa. Browns -3 in the Super Contest, 3.5 over in the Circa. Patriots -3 in the Super Contest, and 3.5 in the Circa. So the Circa moving off of some of those key numbers here, 3 certainly being the penultimate key number, 6 also being a little bit of 1. But the Circa going with a lot of half-point lines here this week, where the Super Contest has some flat numbers, in particular on those key numbers there. So we'll see how that affects not just my card, but the cards of the other people out there in terms of the contest. And again, keep in mind here too, when you talk about the quarter prize in the Circa, there could be some more equity in going for that full point as opposed to the push on a half point. So again, game theory does come into play a little bit. I'll talk more about that as the season goes along, in particular because I'll be trying to make up ground in both of these contests here to the point where maybe taking some of those flat numbers, running the risk of a half point, just not necessarily worth it as we go forward here throughout the rest of the season. So we take a look here in the Super Contest at the 3 likely picks to make my card, and I've got a handful of leans here for you as well. Last week, look, the Panthers were a bad handicap. The Buccaneers got unlucky with that blown whistle and Jameis Winston with more turnovers than an Arby's. And those things happen. The Bears should have won the game. They had a bunch of red zone opportunities. They kicked a bunch of short field goals. Kind of ridiculous that Matt Nagy would do that. But that's what you're up against here in the NFL sometimes. Sometimes you're going to read a game wrong, like Carolina coming off the bye. Other times, you're just going to run into bad luck or bad officiating or something else. And sometimes you're going to run on the right side of those things. And So far this year, it feels like I haven't run on the right side of really any of them, but I've run on the bad side of a lot of different circumstances. So hopefully, you know, they say those things even out. I don't know if it's true or not, but I'm hoping that they kind of do here as we go forward. In any event, as far as my very likely picks go, and again, recording this on Thursday evening before the trick-or-treaters start banging on the door for the Friday show, so things can change. Things can change throughout the day on Friday with updated injury reports, different weather factors, stuff like that. So again, these picks are very likely to make my card, not a guarantee to make the card, but generally speaking, they're going to. I haven't changed my mind too much here so far this season. So beginning with number four, the Jacksonville Jaguars here, they are plus one in the Super Contest for that early game across the pond in London. And look, I mean, this is basically a home game for Jacksonville. You know, the Texans have played an international game. They played in Mexico City a few years ago, but they've never played in London. And it is a change, not just the time change, but, you know, obviously you're staying in a different hotel than you normally would. Different types of travel considerations to the stadium. You've got a pro Jacksonville crowd here as well. So there's also that. So, you know, Jacksonville just a lot more comfortable in the setting. And I do think that definitely matters here when you talk about these London games. You know, you look at Houston, and obviously they've got to figure some different things out defensively without J.J. Watt. They've been playing better defensively here of late, but now without a game changer, a disruptor like Watt, a lot of teams are going to play with a lot less fear, you know, because when you think about it, and watch Ohio State games with Chase Young, you know, watch games against the Rams with Aaron Donald, watch games against, you know, teams like the 49ers, where they've got such great edge pressure. Maybe those guys don't always get there. Maybe they don't always get the sacks, but the defensive coordinators know that teams are going to actively run plays away from that side. So their defensive formation isn't spread out as much. They can put that extra help side defender on the wide side of the field or on the side where Watt or Young or Bosa or any of these other guys, where those players aren't lined up. So this changes a lot of things for the Houston Texans not to have Watt. It opens up the entire field and the entire playbook for the opposition. And Houston's not a very good defense anyway. In fact, Jacksonville 0.4 yards per play better on defense than the Houston Texans. And also, think about this. All the love about the Houston offense, all the love about Deshaun Watson, and it's deserved. Deshaun Watson is a phenomenal player. But the Jaguars are almost right there in yards per play on offense. Houston only 0.1 more yards per play on offense than Jacksonville. So this is a pretty big deal here for Houston, that Jacksonville's offense, at least on a yards per play basis, is about even with them, and Jacksonville's defense is substantially better. Houston, with those injury concerns, with Watt, with Will Fuller, DeAndre Hopkins limited in practice again this week, probably just a veteran thing for him. But this Jaguars defense getting a little bit better here. Opponents are only scoring on 30.1% of their possessions against Jacksonville, even though the Jaguars are tied for 21st in takeaways with 9. So they've done a good job of keeping the opposition from scoring, even though they're not taking the football away. You look at the Patriots, they're taking the football away from everybody. So their possession or their opponent's percentage of possessions ending in points is very, very low. That's the case that you get a lot of times, you know, because you can't score without the football. Jacksonville playing well in its base defense, maybe bending at times, not breaking, whereas opponents are scoring on 40% of their possessions against the Houston Texans. Jacksonville held down Watson in that week 2 game. It was Gardner Minshew's first start. He's got a lot more experience now. The Jaguars do get fairly decent pressure, and they're 10th in adjusted net yards per pass attempt allowed. Houston, 26th in adjusted net yards per pass attempt. And again, that's with Watt and with the impact that Watt has on plays run to the opposite side of the field. So I think Jacksonville is set up really nicely here in this game. Factor in their familiarity with the setting. Factor in that this line is coming down, even though the consensus shows money on Houston. I'm on the Jacksonville Jaguars here, plus one, to get that win over in London. Next up on the card for me here is number 12, the Minnesota Vikings, who are plus 2.5 in the Super Contest. We don't even have a line out there in the market otherwise, because everybody's wondering whether or not Patrick Mahomes is going to play. I'm on the Vikings here regardless, and I understand that if Mahomes is announced as the starting quarterback, this line will probably open higher in the market than 2.5. So there is a chance that I'm taking a bad number here. Of course, if Matt Moore winds up playing, there's a chance that this winds up being an okay number. Maybe the Vikings are a road favorite like Green Bay was, something like that. But I want to take this irrespective of whether or not Mahomes plays this game, because I think Minnesota's just in a good spot, and I don't think people realize just how good this Minnesota team is. They should carve up this Kansas City defense. Kansas City's defense, 29th in yards per carry allowed. Some of their defensive numbers aided by playing some really mediocre offenses over the course of the schedule. But Kansas City has also allowed over 400 yards 4 times so far this year. Looks like Adam Thielen probably going to play with a little bit of extra rest. They're keeping Stephon Diggs happy. Kirk Cousins is playing really, really well. And you've got to think that the switch over to Kevin Stefanski has worked in Kirk Cousins' favor. I know Cousins had some very negative highlights early on in the season, but real quietly, this Minnesota offense is top 3 in yards per play. Stefanski, a young guy in his late 30s, been with the Vikings for a very long time. This passing game is efficient. This rush attack is efficient. And it certainly seems like Cousins is really fitting in here nicely after some of the mess that they had last year with offensive coordinators like North Turner and some of the other people that were there. I think Stefanski fits well. I think Cousins is comfortable with him. I think this offense is humming right along. And I don't see a whole lot of resistance coming from that Kansas City defense. Now, look, the Vikings defense doesn't grade all that well in pressure. And I wish they pressured a little bit more so that if Patrick Mahomes plays, they can go chase him around as he's dealing with that knee injury. But what the Vikings have done really, really well is cover. And if this winds up being Matt Moore, a guy who's not nearly as mobile as Mahomes, can't improvise as much as Mahomes, I think this is a situation that actually, in a lot of ways, sets up really well for this Minnesota defense. If Mahomes plays, he's what, 70, 75%? If Moore plays, you're asking a backup quarterback to go up against a Vikings defense that has played very well this year, does very well against the pass, limits big plays. They're top 10 in yards after catch allowed. I think everything points to the Vikings here in this game, whether it's Mahomes or not. So again, this one very likely to make my card. We'll see what sorts of updates we get on Mahomes and, you know, what happens here when this line actually gets posted in the marketplace. But number 12, the Minnesota Vikings plus 2.5, definitely on my very likely list here for this week. Next up, we got a favorite here. That is number 17, the Oakland Raiders, who are a 2.5-point favorite as they host the Detroit Lions here. I wish I could play the over in the Super Contest because I think that's the best bet in this game. But the Raiders are back at home for the first time in 6 weeks. Long road trip for Detroit here. The first one for them since the opener when they played against Arizona. They played, at Philadelphia and at Green Bay, I believe. So they haven't had too many frequent flyer miles here over the last little while. The defense has allowed a ton of passing yards here this season for the Lions. They've allowed the second most air yards in the NFL. I will say that Oakland is number one, hence my thoughts here on the over. But the Raiders this season, despite having 28 fewer pass attempts, and I believe 32 fewer plays, I want to say, they still have a higher yards per play than the Detroit Lions. And I think there's some positive regression coming here for this Raiders team. They're fifth in average time of possession on drives. They're sixth in yards per drive, but they're 15th in points per drive. The Raiders are third in third down conversion rate on offense. The Lions are 29th in third down conversion rate against on defense. So the Raiders should extend a lot of drives here in this game. Seems like Derek Carr is getting along well with John Gruden. Josh Jacobs gets to take his cracks against a very bad Detroit Lions rush defense. This game is probably a shootout, but I do like the Raiders here. Again, minus 2.5. I think Gruden has a good game plan. I think they come out well at home in their first home game back in 6 weeks. And also a long trip here for Detroit. If Oakland can play from in front, it's really going to help them here in this matchup. Oakland, far too often in those road games, wound up playing from big deficits and just couldn't really do a whole lot offensively and couldn't get enough stops defensively. Here, I think it's a different type of scenario with Detroit making such a long trip. And also, too, I think Oakland's going to be very well prepared for this game. I kind of wonder about Matt Patricia and his preparedness. And I also wonder about Matt Patricia's ability to make adjustments as the game goes along. I think the Raiders have a coaching advantage here in this particular game. So Raiders -2.5 on my list of very likely picks here for this weekend. So the three very likely picks in the Super Contest this week, Jaguars +1, Vikings +2.5, Raiders -2.5. As far as some leans here that I'm looking at for this week, we'll start with number 7 by Super Contest rotation order, the Carolina Panthers. They're a 3.5-point favorite here hosting the Tennessee Titans. And maybe I was just a week early on Carolina. You know, last week, just getting trucked by the 49ers. The 49ers came ready to play. The Panthers didn't. And sometimes that'll happen coming off of a bye. We all think of the bye as something that's a big-time positive, and at least for the workload of Christian McCaffrey, I think it should be. But sometimes it's a little bit hard for teams to get back on track, and in particular, get back on track starting with a game so far away from home there in Santa Clara, all the way across the country. Late kickoff throws off your schedule. Your schedule's already thrown off because you're coming off of a bye. I would be kind of interested to find out how teams do off a bye week when they're playing cross country, when they're playing in a different time zone, when everything is different about the game day. You've got that travel on Friday or Saturday, whenever teams decide to leave. It's got to be hard because you've already had that routine interrupted by the bye week because you're used to playing. You're used to your routines and practice times and everything else. You've already had that disruption to your circadian rhythm. Maybe it's a bad thing to start a long way from home off that bye and try to get things back on track. So for the Panthers here, I think being back at home with a bigger sense of urgency off the loss are a couple of really big factors in their favor here. Christian McCaffrey, only 18 touches last week, 14 carries, 4 receptions. He should still be fresh. He should still be ready. He should still be good to go. The Panthers are still 3rd in adjusted net yard per pass attempt allowed. Yeah, the run defense isn't great, and that is a concern against Tennessee, but they've had 2 games where they were really bad. In the first game of the season, and then in that game against the 49ers last week. Titans only 5 yards per play on the season. They've been outgained in 6 of their 8 games so far. And something we talked about this week, throughout the week, basically, on Bang the Book Radio, looking mostly in the context of the Oregon Ducks. 2 games they probably could have lost. 2 games maybe that you could say they should have lost. You feel like that 3rd game, the shit hits the fan, and they do wind up losing that game. I think in this case, that could be the spot here for Tennessee, where they should have lost the last 2 weeks. You know, they had that officiating blunder last week. The Chargers missed just golden opportunities, had a couple of touchdowns taken off the board because of reviews and fumbles and everything else. The Titans have been living on the right side of luck. And when you've got a couple near losses and win those ugly games back to back, usually it comes to a head in that 3rd game. So Panthers -3.5, probably the strongest of my set of leans here, the most likely to make it onto the card alongside the Raiders, the Vikings, and the Jaguars. Next up on my short list here, number 16, the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're a 1-point underdog against the Indianapolis Colts. And this is a little bit of a contrarian look. There's not a whole lot of interest in the Steelers here for this week, but the Steelers get a lot of pressure. They pressure very well on the edges. Something that they've done here over the last few years through the draft is infuse a lot of speed and a lot of edge talent with some outside linebackers, with some defensive ends. I wonder how Jacoby Brissett will do with that, because Jacoby Brissett hasn't been pressured a whole lot. You know, early on in the year, the Colts had some questions with their offensive line, and you know, teams kind of took a little bit of advantage of that. But lately, Brissett hasn't faced a whole lot of pass rushers. Last week, the Broncos did have 4 sacks, only for 11 yards, so maybe some more of the coverage variety. But the Steelers have a top-5 run defense. They're very aggressive in their blitz packages. They get back there, and they disrupt some things. And I do wonder how Brissett handles that, in particular with T.Y. Hilton on the injury list once again. I don't think he practiced on Thursday, so you do kind of wonder about that a little bit. And also, too, here, you know, Mason Rudolph got better as that game went along against the Dolphins, I know it's the Dolphins. I know they suck. I know they've been a bad second half team, but Mason Rudolph got better as that game went along, got rolling a little bit, got a little bit of confidence going, coming off the injury. And Indianapolis, you know, I just talked about some of the travel considerations for some of these teams. Indianapolis only played one road game in the last 5 weeks. I think this line is very telling about Pittsburgh's chances. I think that the public is aligning itself with Indianapolis, and I don't mind going against that here this week. So number 16, the Pittsburgh Steelers, +1 on my short list of leans. Another one here, number 19, the Seattle Seahawks. They're a 6-point favorite, and this is a square point of view, I think. But look, man, I can't in good conscience ever back Jameis Winston again. 11 turnovers the last 2 weeks here for the Buccaneers, most of them on Jameis Winston. Third game of the season with four or more turnovers last week for Seattle. And Seattle takes very good care of the football. They have lost 7 fumbles this year, but Russ has only thrown 1 interception. And if there are going to be extra possessions for Seattle in this game, excuse me, and it certainly looks like there should be, given that Jameis Winston is involved, I think that you've probably got a pretty good situation here for Seattle. Furthermore, again, looking at another scheduling situation here, this is the 5th straight road game for Tampa Bay and their 6th road game out of the last 7. Now, they did have a bye week included in there after the game in London, but like Oakland, they have not been home for quite some time. So I think this is a tough spot for them. Long, long, long trip up to Seattle. I get it. Everyone wants to fade Seattle. I understand why. I think the Seahawks are kind of a fraudulent team, but I don't know if this is the week to fade them. I think this may be a week to possibly back them, look to fade them in some of their subsequent matchups, but I don't think Tampa Bay is in a good spot at all whatsoever here. Again, Winston can't take care of the football. Lots and lots of travel for this team. You kind of wonder internally if there's some discussion on how Winston's just not the guy, and you sort of wonder if they move on from him in next season. And if that's the case, he's got to hear those whispers. I mean, he's got to know, you know, and I get it. Again, Seattle is a fade-worthy team, given that they have overachieved this season. And I know this is a square look, but Seattle's probably going to wind up with an extra possession or two in this game because of some turnovers and because they take care of the football. And that may be all the difference that they need here to get Russ and the boys some points on the board. So number 19, the Seattle Seahawks, again, very public. I get it, but -6, one of my leans here for this week. A couple others to touch on very briefly here. Looking at some contrarian dogs in the Ravens and the Giants in primetime spots. Again, I've gone up against the Patriots twice in the last 2 weeks with the Jets and with the Browns. Maybe this is the spot where they get tripped up. Maybe this is where they have a difficult game with Harbaugh coming off the bye. But Brad Powers talked about it on Thursday's show. You know, Bill Belichick is outstanding against first and second year quarterbacks. 69% against the spread in his career against the second-year quarterback. So that does give me some pause. I'm going to try and see what's going on with this game, look some more at how this line is kind of setting up. But I'd be crazy not to have the Ravens on my short list, given that the Patriots, again, just have that defensive regression kind of lurking behind the corner or around the corner there. One other one here, the Giants. I mean, look, Dallas just hasn't been consistent this season. You know, they embarrassed the Giants in week 1. That has to stick in the craw of the New York Giants here. You've got to think that this is a game that they've had circled for quite some time after just getting picked apart by Kellen Moore and Dak Prescott. Daniel Jones here instead of Eli Manning, and Eli Manning played pretty well in that first game, was able to move the football against that Dallas defense. Daniel Jones kind of growing up a little bit here over the last couple of games. This line's probably just a little bit too high for Dallas, again, in a road spot with their inconsistencies. But I do think that I like, you know, the other 3 leans I've talked about here a little bit more. So as far as this week goes in the Super Contest, number 4, the Jaguars, +1. Number 12, the Vikings, +2.5. Number 17, the Raiders, -2.5. The 3 very likely picks for me. As far as the leans go, number 7, the Panthers, -3.5. Number 16, the Steelers, +1. Those are my 2 favorite leans here this week. And then number 19, the Seahawks, -6. You've got the Ravens here. They're 3.5-point dog, or they're 3-point dog in the Super Contest. 3.5 in the Circa. So that half point could make a big difference with number 26 in the Super Contest rotation order. And then the Giants, number 28, plus the 7. So those are my picks and my leans here for this week in the NFL for the Super Contest. And again, as always, on Saturdays over at bangthebook.com, go check out the Super Contest article with the picks for both of our entries, the lines, and the consensus with the pick counts for the Super Contest as well as for the Circa Million. And you can see our recap articles on Tuesday as well. We got one more guest, one more segment here for this week on Bang the Book Radio. That is with Brent, the head risk manager down at DSI Sportsbook, for this week's version of the odds report. Some very interesting sharp money out there on both sides and totals across college football and the NFL. Some of them weather related, some of them good numbers grabs, a lot of different spinning plates for week 10 of the college football season and week 9 of the NFL season. So here is that version of the odds report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. I'm joined by Brent, the head risk manager down at DSI Sportsbook, for this week's version of the odds report. Lots of sharp money out there. We're going to talk about what DSI has seen in-house. Brent, how's it going today, man?
Going good. This is, I don't know, a fun time of year. You got all these variables coming into play. You got all these games going on, as you like to rib me about, college basketball just around the corner. So it's busy, busy time. Even, I mean, NBA has been quite active so far. Even like some of the future markets have moved quite a bit. Golden State's probably been one of the biggest initial moves I've seen in futures markets and stuff like that, based on the way they came out. So it's interesting. I mean, the kind of thing that really attracts me about this job is so dynamic. I mean, every day it's different. It's just never the same day after day, and I love that about it.
Now, something I'm kind of curious about, and then we'll get into some of these games here real quickly though, but you know, college basketball, I think there's 140 games on Tuesday or some absurd number. So I mean, you've got to hit the ground running here. But what I'm kind of curious about is, when you've got college basketball, obviously you have NBA and NHL already going on, but when you have college basketball, you know, how does that alter your daily routine? I mean, when it's football season, it's, you know, you still have baseball going on, but, you know, football games once a week, plenty of time to manage risks, stuff like that. How much time do you have to give to football when you've got college basketball, the NBA and the NHL all going on every day?
Yeah, you definitely have to, you know, I mean, it's a question of allocating resources and allocating your time. I mean, if you're going to get, you know, say one single college basketball game versus an NBA game, you're probably going to get, you know, four times the action at least on an NBA game. NBA game versus NFL game, you're probably talking, you know, 10 times that or more. So it's a question of allocating resources. And of course, on games like, you know, Thursday night and Monday night, you're just a ton of NFL action. So that's where the bulk of your time and resources are. But you've got so many markets within an NFL game. You're not just talking like sides, totals, and money lines. You're talking the quarters that have that, the halves that have that, and player props and all that kind of stuff. So it is quite intensive. You know, we do have what's called a bet ticker, where, you know, as your bets come in, no matter what they're bet on, they come across the board and you can filter them by, you know, bet size and have different colors associated to bet size amounts and stuff like that. Just kind of give you an indication of what I look at here. So, you know, I have stuff, you know, if you want to draw your attention to a certain game, you can do it that way. If I'm only following, say, college basketball for a day, I can set my filter up so I only see college basketball. So it's, you know, it's good for us in terms of allocating resources and have people dedicated to specific sports. The definitely the college basketball action early in the season is low, other than marquee games. When things kind of die down across other sports, then it picks up. And of course, the madness that comes with March.
So, I mean, in terms of you mentioned allocating resources. Obviously, you kind of do it all there. I mean, we call you the head risk manager for a reason. But I mean, do you find yourself, you know, sort of gravitating away from football? Because we know these teams already. I mean, to a degree, you can kind of have some things on autopilot a little bit because, you know, you just have expectations with all the data points.
Yeah. The thing with college basketball is, I mean, you don't have, you know, a lot of overnight lines that have been out for, you know, the week. You get stuff like night after night kind of thing. So the markets are a lot more volatile, whereas with football, the closer you get to game time, the more solid and the less, you know, volatility you should have on a number. So I'm not going to say it's easier, but it is more manageable, let's say that. The other thing we have as well, we have the option of how we sort our charts, basically. So the games that have the most action and the most risk can pop to the top, and we pay most of our attention to those. And the games with less action, say, a lower level college basketball game, an added or an extra game, perhaps doesn't get, as much eye flow. But obviously, you're still moving the lines as the market moves.
Last question here. I mean, do you have like different target hold percentages in mind based on the sport? Because again, as you mentioned, college football going to have a lot more volume than college basketball. NBA going to have more volume than college basketball. Do you sort of have like a target goal in mind for a hold percentage? Is it daily? Is it weekly? How do you sort of set that up?
No, what I do more than anything is kind of assess risk profiles to different games in terms of the amount of action that I expect to come with the game, how volatile I kind of expect the market to be. With college basketball, again, we'll have higher profile games where we might hold numbers more because there's more of an influence in terms of public money that comes in. The lower level games, not really, you don't have a kind of a set hold you kind of strive for, and you're not going to hold the number just because you want to hold your hold percentage because you don't know what the outcome of the game is going to be. So it's more in terms of assessing profiles to games. I do that even at the NFL level. We do that with certain games. I mean, obviously your Thursday, Monday, Sunday night games are going to be your bigger ones, but of course you've got games like on a typical Sunday, like let's pick a game here, like Chicago, Philadelphia, for example. I'm going to have a higher profile on that game than I will on the Jets, Miami, simply because I'm going to get a lot more action on that game.
I guess I lied. I guess I got one more question I just thought of here. Just from a futures standpoint in college basketball, do you typically see a lot of futures action before the season, or is it more likely to come in during the season as we've actually got an idea of what we're working with?
If we get sharp action involved on college football futures, that usually comes at early before the season starts. There's just more value at that point. When a team starts playing well, then you might get more action from the public side of things, getting on and saying, wow, this team looks really good. But of course, at that point, if you're doing your job properly, the numbers are adjusted accordingly. The sharps generally, if they're going to find value in futures market, they do it before the season starts.
And it's the same way with college basketball then?
Yes.
All right. Well, let's talk some college football here. And let's start with game 323-324 here, Michigan and Maryland. It looks like some very one-sided action here in this game.
Yeah, one-sided action for sure. And I mean, unfortunately for us, of course, with a side like Michigan, you get money going one way, and that is all on Michigan. We're up to 21.5. I see in the market there are some 21s hanging out there as well. Again, when you move that high, you're not talking about key numbers anymore. Sharp money though is on Michigan, as you can tell. It came Michigan -18. I think this number opened as low as 16.5. I didn't open quite that low, but I did get my sharp money at -18. Blew right through the 20, no problem. Sitting at 21.5, we are right now. And again, I mean, you look at a team like Michigan. They had the big win last week against Notre Dame. Maryland, got blown out by a good Minnesota team last week as well. I mean, they lost by like around 40-ish. So that could play part of it. Obviously, Maryland is at home, but nothing but sharp money and public money. My wager count very one side as well. 5-1 favoring Michigan. So I got sharps and public going the same way.
Has 21.5 been kind of the golden number here to get a little bit of buyback?
No, it's fishing. Yeah, I mean, I've kind of stopped the flow of money at 21.5. But you see, the thing is, it's a misunderstanding that you want to hit a number where people stop betting it. You definitely don't want to do that. You still want action. You just want two-way action. So you kind of you have to go fishing in terms of where you're going to find some buyback and get two-way action. I found so far that even at 21, I still got public money at on Michigan.
All right, so it seems like this number is probably going to go up then.
Unless somewhere out there or here I get money back on Maryland. Yeah, if someone's waiting for the number to go higher, I don't know. But 21.5 is a solid number out there right now and still haven't drawn anything back.
All right, so we go down to the MAC and we go down to game 353-354 here. Northern Illinois and Central Michigan. And the MAC just feels remarkably inconsistent this year. You don't know what you're going to get from one week to the next, but I guess somebody out there feels like they've got a pretty good idea of what they're going to get from one of these teams.
Yeah, you talk about these conferences and these teams that you don't get to see a whole lot of. I've touched on before that when we're sitting here on I get this all the time. People ask me on a Saturday night, they'll say, oh, wow, did you see that play? Did you see that game? And it's just like, we had like 75 college football games. You think I actually sat down and watched any of them? And I mean, the way it's scheduled, it's just like from morning to night, your first halves, your games, your second halves, it's just nonstop. So we don't get to see a whole lot of these teams. That's why we rely on our, you know, our odds makers and power ratings guys to help us out with these things. This one here, Northern Illinois, did get sharp action at +1.5. This line is flip-flopped all the way to the point where Northern Illinois is now a -1.5 favorite on the road. They're at Central Michigan. My count is about 2-1 actually favoring Northern Illinois. Not a massive public count, but still a count 2-1 the other way. I know Central Michigan has some QB questions as well, so that may be, you know, maybe we'll get some good news on the Central Michigan side and flop this number back down. But right now, I think there's still like, some ones hanging out there on Northern Illinois, -1, but +1.5 is where the sharps came in. I'm -1.5 right now on Northern Illinois.
I love Service Academy games. As we jump down to 363, 364, I think they're such fascinating handicaps because obviously both teams run the same style, run that type of triple option, generally a running clock, not a lot of possession, stuff like that, which is why it's so surprising that Air Force is more than a 2-touchdown favorite here against Army.
Yeah, you know, it's funny when these games come up, I always think that like when the favorites, you know, if they're blowing out one of the teams or covering by a lot, they kind of might want to ease up just because there's kind of like a, you know, you're almost on the same side in terms of these teams with the Service Academies, but you find blowouts all the time. It's not like these guys are going to be friendly on the field with each other for sure. This line has gone from Air Force -13.5 all the way up to 15.5 where I am right now. I've seen some 16s on the board. I've seen some 15s as well. I'm sitting at 15.5. Air Force sitting at 6-2. They're at home here to Army. So sharp money there. I'm kind of surprised with this one, or maybe not. That I guess the public is just looking for value on the plus, and they you know, maybe have that same kind of idea that these teams, you know, these academy type games are closer, harder fought games. I'm getting a strong public count on Army, which I'm quite happy to have a count of about 5-1, which is, you know, that's a very strong count in a college football game. So Army wager count 5-1 favoring Army, getting the plus money. I got Air Force money that sharp at -13.5, so a definite public sharp split with the sharps on Air Force. You know, I know Air Force, they lost. I think they had a tough one against Boise State that they lost, you know, the top-ranked opponent. And they lost to Navy as well, who's 6-1, so no shame in that. So I'm kind of comfortable based on the records and what I've seen of Air Force. They, you know, the limited stuff that I have seen, they do seem like a strong side here. Sharp money with them and love to have the public the other way.
What about the total? Because, you know, again, like I said, a running game here with both of these teams running limited possessions. I see the total is 45 or so out there. What does the count look like?
Yeah, I mean, the total has ticked up a little bit. It went from 44.5 to 45.5 where I am right now. I've got, a small count. It slightly favors the under, but just nothing at all worth writing home about.
All right, so we move to game 367, 368 here, UAB and Tennessee. And, again, it looks like money relatively one-sided in this one, too.
Yeah, and again, you almost feel sorry sometimes for Tennessee. I mean, they play such a tough schedule. You know, Georgia's and Alabama's and Florida's they have to go up against, and they're sitting here at 3-5, and it's just like you kind of feel weary and battered a little bit. You've got UAB sitting at 6-1, Tennessee 3-5, yet Tennessee's a double-digit favorite at home. Sharp money came in on them at -10. I'm up to 12.5 right now. There's some 12s and 12.5s out on the market. So pretty much consensus in terms of this move. Most books did open -10 like us. Most books are all at 12 and 12.5 like we are. My count's pretty much dead even. When you look, you know, like I say, on the surface, when you look at records, maybe you might find some value with UAB. But I think you get, you know, a strength of schedule and quality of opposition comes into play here.
Yeah, UAB has played the 189th ranked schedule according to Sagarin. So this is a massive step up in class for them.
And how many do they rank?
Sagarin does FCS too. I think there's like 260. I actually looked this up. There are 58 FCS teams that have played a harder schedule than UAB this year.
Wow. Yeah, there you go. That might be reading into the tea leaves or whatever. That might be a clue right there.
Yeah, for sure. And keep that in mind, too, here throughout the rest of the year. You know, you get some strength of schedule mismatches, and in particular in college basketball, we'll see some sharp action based on strength of schedule discrepancies. One more game on the college side here, and this one is a marquee game, so I'm glad we get to talk about it. Neutral site game in Jacksonville, 371-372, Georgia and Florida.
Yeah, I mean, kind of neutral, but it is in the state of Florida, at least. And it's interesting when you look at these games, these teams like this, you've got Georgia, I think, are ranked eighth right now. against number six Florida. You're playing in Florida's home state, yet you've got Georgia as a 4-point favorite. So it's like Georgia is 2 points worse on the rankings, but favored by the sharps came in at -4. We're up to -6 right now, and that again just consensus across the board. I've even seen some 6.5 -05, so +6.5 dog 15 with their up there. So big move. The lowest number I think opened on this one was 3.5. I got bet at -4. The good thing for me, I guess, it's kind of similar to the Army situation, is I've got a strong count the other way, a 5-to-1 wager count on Florida. So I got a public count, 5-to-1 favoring Florida, sharp money on Georgia, -4. And, you know, it's interesting, too. I think you can get lost in looking at, you know, relative opponents and stuff like that. The fact that, you know, Florida beat South Carolina last week by, I think it won by around 10 or 11, something like that. And Georgia on the other side, of course, lost to South Carolina, that big upset. But it really comes down to how they go on the field. And I guess the general consensus is Florida's just simply the stronger, better team, even though Georgia's the stronger team, even though the records are almost identical and the ratings are almost identical as well.
Not that I'm a sharp guy by any means, but I'm kind of waiting to see if Florida gets to 7 here, because I think at this point in time, I do kind of like Florida at the current price. Is there any chance this thing gets to 7?
Well, like I said, I kind of didn't expect to move off 6, and I am kind of digging in at 6 just because I got such a strong wager count the other way. You know, at 6 itself, I've got a count. My count is about 4-to-1 favoring Florida, so the money is still coming in that way. But even when I was at, you know, lower numbers, even at like 4.5, I still had a count favoring Florida. So I've, you know, gradually gone up with the market. I haven't been as aggressive as some other books where you see, like I said, there's a 6.5 -05 on Georgia right now. So I haven't been that aggressive just because I have so many more bets the other way on Florida. So it's a good spot for me. The fact that some books have touched 6.5, we wouldn't be surprised if the board, you know, got painted that way. But I don't think it's going to hit 7. Yeah, that would surprise me.
All right, so we move over to the NFL side of things here, and we got a handful of games to talk about, including something very, very interesting in the Sunday Night Football game, so make sure that you stay tuned for that one. But we start with game 461-462 here. Again, you know, we don't pick these games. We just kind of take whatever gets sharp action, and beginning with the Jets in Miami is maybe a little bit deflating.
Yeah, when you're talking about two teams at this point of the season who have one win, you know, between them, it's kind of a deflating or disappointing for sure. You know, the over here, I'm kind of, you might be surprised, I think, to have, you know, sharp money on the over in this one. It did come at over 40, which is, a very low number, of course, but it kind of reflection of, you know, these two teams in terms of how inept, I guess, they've been so far this year. Jets are a -3-point favorite on the road. That line dropped down from 5.5, but the sharp money is on the total here. Over 40 is where it came in. Pretty much everyone across the board is 42.5. So again, that's, you know, a substantial move in the total, going 2.5 points on an NFL game. You know, talk about pseudo sharp numbers of 41. So it got through there to up to 42.5. And I mean, Miami's, you know, recent weeks, they have shown life. They looked a little bit better. I mean, with Fitzpatrick at quarterback and stuff like that. And I guess the Jets feeling too. I mean, they do have some talent at some key positions. They just kind of put it all together, I guess. But over 40 is where the sharp money came on this. My count on the side itself is about 2-to-1 favoring the Jets. So it has gone from -5.5 down to 3 -120, even though my count slightly favors the Jets.
All right. So this one surprises me quite a bit. And this is why I'm on this side and, you know, not betting professionally or something like that. Game 465-466, Detroit and Oakland. I mean, you look at these two teams, you look at their bodies at work. It feels like a stone cold over, but maybe not.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to say that you're square by any means.
Oh, Adam. I am.
I mean, you're right, at least in terms of the count. I mean, my count is dead over, which is 5-to-1, which for a total is a very, very strong count. I mean, to be 5-to-1 towards the over is very strong, especially this, you know, this early in the week being Thursday with these games on Sunday. So I've got a strong, strong sharp and public split on this one. The public is all over this one going over. And I got sharp money on the under 52.5. I think this game, in terms of like an analogy, is one of those games where it kind of feels like. I don't know that this game was kind of set up to a number, but it kind of has that feeling. This number did initially get bet up to 52.5, and it got immediately bet down to all the way to 50.5. The move from 52.5 to 50.5 was very, very quick. I do see this number getting down to 50 for sure. I think it's going to keep dropping. I'm at 50.5 right now, but 50, 49.5, I think it's going to settle around there by Sunday. The reason why I say this kind of fits the profile of a setup is just one thing to look at it, and again, you can go and get there's services out there that show you timestamps of moves and how quickly they came. I mean, this move was bet down really, really quick. A gradual, over the course of time kind of bleed down of a number is less of a setup. When a number moves within, say, like a half an hour, when it moves like a point and a half, 2 points on a total like that, you kind of, to me, it just feels and looks like a number that was set up. Again, I'm not going to try and, suggest that you have key numbers on totals like this that you really hold on to. I mean, yeah, you may say like 37 and 41 back in the day more so. But this, 52 is kind of a pseudo key number, if you want to call it, or just a number that makes sense. And that's why getting at 52.5 was probably more valuable than something like 51 or 51.5. 52, you're talking 7 touchdowns and a field goal kind of thing. So that's how you get to that. But this game, I don't know, I'm just interested in this one because it just kind of felt like one of those games that got set up. It did gradually get bet up to the point where it hit 52.5 and just like bang it. If you look into the timestamp of how quick this number moved down, it was really, really quick.
What about the spread on this game? Because I think that's interesting about this one too.
Yeah, it has kind of ticked up Oakland. And I think, when you look at things like Oakland's, they're a decent team. I think they're better than people think. Count wise, I do have a count favoring Detroit about 2-1. Yet this number has gone from -1 to about 2. Generally, kind of, I guess the consensus number out there is 2 right now. You see some of those like pseudo 1.5s and 2s out there. I'm sitting at 2. I think another book out there is 2.5 dog 15. So this number has ticked up gradually on the home favorite Oakland from 1 to 2 or 2.5 where we are right now. And yet my count is about 2-1 the other way.
All right, so we jumped out one spot on the board here, 467, 468. Tampa Bay and Seattle, and the Buccaneers with 11 turnovers the last 2 weeks, and that just kind of comes with the territory with Jameis Winston. Seems like bettors are not deterred, though. They kind of like this one a little bit.
Yeah, I'm going to, right off the bat, I'm going to say I do have a sharp and public split favoring Seattle. I got the public on Seattle, of course, accountable 4-1 favoring them. As you see, this number has dropped down, not dramatically, but from the 6.5 down to 5.5 where we are right now. I see some 5s touching the board right now as well. So it's kind of like up-to-date moves here from the 6.5 down to 5.5. Some popping up at 5 right now, and it seems to be just a consensus towards Tampa Bay. And yeah, you're right to mention the turnovers with Tampa Bay. I mean, that's just been like a huge problem for them. But if you look at, in terms of their difficulty of schedule, they're right up probably top 10. I think their front 7 is really, really solid defensively. I think Winston does a good job of pushing the ball downfield when he pushes it deep. Kind of short stuff, maybe not his game. And you talk about a Seattle team who's, I don't know, you just kind of get the feeling, or at least I do. They just week after week, I look at them and they seem overvalued. I mean, they kind of barely squeaked by Atlanta last week. I mean, they had the big early lead and then landed on 7 in terms of the end result. But, I mean, Atlanta went for, I think, like over 450 yards against Seattle last week. I think their secondary is a liability. I think Tampa Bay, this just kind of fits the profile of the kind of team that is going to cause Seattle problems. I think Tampa Bay might be undervalued and Seattle overvalued. So I'm looking forward to this one, and I'm very happy that I got a public count so high favoring the Seahawks, Adam.
All right, so we jumped the game 469, 470 here, and somebody caught you before the adjustment to the Joe Flacco news in this game.
Yeah, it kind of looks like that. I mean, sometimes you see numbers move on totals where you kind of look into it and you're like, okay, someone's got a better feel for a weather situation than perhaps we do. This one, the situation with Flacco, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, when it first came out, they talked about Flacco was, going to miss a game or be out basically because he kind of berated his own coach and his own team. Now it turns out the Flacco might be gone for a few weeks. I think they're talking now, it might be like up to 4 weeks that he's out. So perhaps it's more serious than it appears. Of course, their quarterback they drafted, he's not ready for the show either. He's hurt. So we're looking at, I guess, Brandon Allen is the quarterback who's going to be out there for Denver. You know, Cleveland's been, you know, a very public side since even, you know, before the season started in terms of futures market. We keep talking about them, even though they're sitting at 2-5 on the season. So disappointing season so far for them, but that hasn't stopped the public from backing them as well. I got Browns money to the tune of 5-1. Now, the sharp money did come in on Cleveland when it was +1.5. You see, of course, we're up to 3.5 right now, or 3.25 is kind of out, you know, out there is where the market is, between, you know, 3-1/4, 3-20, or 3.5, 15 out there. So this has moved quite a bit. Other than the initial sharp hit on Cleveland +1.5, I really haven't got, you know, a whole lot of risk at any key numbers. But even since we hit number 3, my wager count's been about 3-1 favoring the Browns. So I think it's going to continue that way. I do foresee 3.5 kind of being the number on game day, unless, you know, when 3.5 does pop up, a sharp bet grabs the other way. But I'm not sure that's going to happen.
Before we get to Sunday Night Football here, where we've got some very interesting sharp action to talk about, I do want to ask you about this Chargers situation. Game 471-472, they host Green Bay. But what I want to talk about in particular is that they fired offensive coordinator Ken Wisenhunt earlier in the week, and it's kind of that time of year. We're going to start having coordinators fired, coaches fired, all that type of thing. Do you make adjustments for that in the line, or do you kind of let, you know, the betting populace make those adjustments for you when a coordinator or coach is fired?
No, generally you kind of just let the, you know, let the people decide that. And, you know, looking at the Chargers situation, you almost kind of feel like at some point someone says, you know, we've got to blame someone for this. Who do we blame? Okay, let's go with him, kind of thing. So, you know, a game like this and the fire like that, it really isn't going to have a big, you know, a big impact on the number at all.
What about a head coach? Is that going to matter more than a coordinator?
I'm going to say it depends. I mean, look, if the talent on the field just isn't there, it's not going to make a whole lot of difference. You look at, like, Washington. It really hasn't made a difference to Washington in terms of how we rate them, you know, in terms of power ratings and stuff like that. So, you know, that definitely hasn't hurt them at, you know, hasn't helped or hurt them much. It's just, you know, you look at the talent that they have. Was it a question of the coach not making use of it, or is it just the talent's not there? I think in a case like Washington, the talent's just not there.
All right, so game 473-474. I mean, signature game, marquee game, late game on Sunday. The handle is going to be incredible for this one. New England and Baltimore, and we've got a lot to unpack here before we finish up this segment.
Yeah, I mean, for us, you know, it's a good game and a good situation. Now, I do have sharp money on both sides of this equation. The number did get to 5 on New England, and that's where sharp money came in on Baltimore. So I got Baltimore +5 as sharp action, but I've seen some, you know, influential sharp money come back on New England. Now that it hits -3, I get a feeling this number probably is going to tick back up to 3-15, maybe 3-20. I'm not sure if we're going to see 3.5 again, but I think probably 3 and money is what we're going to have with New England. It just kind of feels like the right number. I've got a wager count about 2-1 favoring New England, and I have a count of about 2-1 favoring the over as well. So I have public money on the over. Fortunately, we did take sharp money on the under, though. Under 46.5 in this game is where the sharp money came. You know, just prepping for the show or looking at the number, was down to 45.5, so it had moved one full point. Looking right now at the Dom Best screen across the board at 45, so it's continued to tick down. I think, you know, that's kind of the right way. New England's defense has been strong, you know, and Baltimore, they are one of those teams who kind of use up a whole lot of clock. So I think this number was just kind of a bit too high to start with. Maybe we anticipated public money coming in on the over. That has come on the over, but still the number's ticking down just because of that sharp money. It kind of feels like things are going to settle with New England -3 and 45. You know, I'm very curious to see what happens, you know, come Sunday night, because of course you're going to get a lot more, you know, public money involved. And again, when I talk about influential money that can move the market, some of it is just deep pocket money, not necessarily sharp. So you can see, you know, numbers bounce around, but I do believe that the, you know, I'd be surprised, put it this way, to see New England -3.5 again. I think 3 in money is probably where it's going to go. And I think 45.5 is where it's going to sell. I don't see it going lower than 45, I don't think.
It's such a fascinating game, and it's such a really interesting one. And you know what's kind of a bummer is that 1 o'clock game, Minnesota and Kansas City, no number up on the board right now because we're still waiting to find out about Patrick Mahomes. But that could have been a big handle game too, but an injury situation there in that one. At least we don't have the same thing here in New England and Baltimore. So should be a lot of fun. Should be a real good week for everybody out there. Brent, we appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Have a great weekend, Adam. I appreciate you having me on.
Good to wrap up this week of Bang the Book Radio with the odds report. Again, one of our favorite segments, one of our listeners' favorite segments as well. So happy to finish up this week with that segment. We'll have a lot of good stuff this weekend at bangthebook.com for you. And after the weekend, coming up on Monday, we'll have our Week 11 College Football First Look with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. And also our Handicapping the Hardwood debut for 2019 for the college basketball season. What I will do is I will split up the two. Well, let me know. Give me some feedback. At Skating Tripods on Twitter, Adam at bangthebook.com via email. Let me know if you want me to split up those two segments with the College Football First Look and the Handicapping the Hardwood segment. If it's easier, I'll keep them together. I'll keep them together here for the first week just to see if we get some feedback on it. But if you decide that, you know, maybe you just want to hear college basketball first and foremost, college football as the week goes along, maybe having that as two separate segments could work out for you. So let me know at Skating Tripods on Twitter, Adam at bangthebook.com. Let me know after you hear Monday's segment. Maybe you'll have a better frame of reference at that point. But we will be talking college football and college basketball with Kyle there on that Monday segment. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Have a happy, healthy, smart, safe weekend, and I will talk to you again on Monday.